Welcome once again to our program, Salvation History. The Old Testament, the story of the creation, fall, and the beginning of the redemption of humankind. About how God's plan is working out all through the Old Testament and all the strange happenings and the evil kings and the destructions of people and the wars. Yet God is working out and by sending the prophets to remind them that the Messiah, the Holy One of Israel, Emmanuel, is coming. Our guest again is Ron Eldred, who is professor, our teaching religion and history at John Paul II Catholic High. I'm your host, Father Larry Moran, chaplain at Carmelite Monastery, just south of Terre Haute at the entrance of Allendale, and chaplain for John Paul II Catholic High at 12 Points. Ron, welcome once again. We finished the Northern Kingdom, how it had split under Solomon into two kingdoms, 10.5 in the north, 1.5 Judah and Benjamin in the south, Benjamin being the smallest of the tribes. And then finally, the Northern Kingdom is completely destroyed by the Assyrians. So we're left now with what's left of the Southern Kingdom of Judah to carry on waiting for the Messiah to come, its long-awaited presence. So what can we say about the Southern Kingdom of Judah, and how did it fare after Solomon's death?
The Southern Kingdom, and of course the headquarters was Jerusalem, was the last from 722 to or 930, depending on which year Solomon died, to 586 or 587. I've seen both of those dates. It lasted longer because God gave the Judeans every chance to repent of their sins and worship Him alone, because Jerusalem and the temple were located there probably as much as anything else. But also it had several good kings, unlike the Northern Kingdom, that of the 20 kings were all bad. But during the 336 years of its existence, the Southern Kingdom of Judah did have several good kings. And because God had promised David that his royal dynasty would last forever, that probably had something to do with it too, showing a little favor to the Southern Kingdom. But of course, we know that his dynasty was to be filled by his successor about 1,000 years later, the Messiah, who would reign as King of heaven and earth forever. God sent many great prophets to Judah, just as he had done to the Northern Kingdom, again and again, such as Isaiah and Jeremiah, two of the greatest, to admonish them for their sins and to repent and to warn them of the disasters that awaited them if they didn't.
Well, to refresh our memory, Ron, give us a brief recap about how the Southern Kingdom of Judah came about.
David and Solomon had ruled over the United Kingdom of Israel, which was a union of the 12 tribes of Israel living in what had become the land of Canaan, what had been the land of Canaan. The United Kingdom lasted from approximately 1020 to 930 BC. As we earlier discussed, when King Solomon died around 930 or 922, the 10 northern tribes refused to accept his son Rehoboam as their king. He's too much of a tyrant. Instead, they, as Solomon had been proving to be in his old age, his foolish old age, instead they chose Jeroboam, the southern king of the northern kingdom did, who was not of the house of David, as their king. The Northern Kingdom kept the name of the Kingdom of Israel, whereas the Southern Kingdom came to be known as the Kingdom of Judah. At first, only the tribe of Judah remained loyal to the house of David, but soon afterwards, part of the tribe of Benjamin joined Judah. Jerusalem became the capital of the new Kingdom of Judah, and Samaria, the capital of Israel, the Northern Kingdom. And after the destruction of Israel in 722 by the Assyrians, as we discussed, Judah continued to exist for about another century and a half until conquered by the Babylonians in 586 or 587.
Okay, now Israel is the name for the southern or the northern
kingdom? The northern kingdom.
Well, the northern kingdom.
Samaria is its capital.
Okay.
And that's the one that fell first, conquered by the Assyrians in 722.
Okay. Well, can you give us a short rundown on what was happening to Judah, the southern kingdom, while Israel was moving towards his own destruction?
Yes, we've already described, of course, in the earlier session before this one, Israel fell. But since Judah had 20 kings from about 930 to 586, I think that it can we can best do this by looking at only the best and the worst of the Judean kings. In other words, not all 20, but maybe six or seven, something like that, of the best and the worst. For the next 60 years after the rebellion and separation of Israel from the kingdom of Israel, Judah tried to reestablish his authority over the northern kingdom. Consequently, there was perpetual war between the two, between the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. Rehoboam, that is Solomon's son, who was the king, tried to be king over all the whole 12 tribes, but the 10 northern tribes, of course, rebelled against him. But while he was king before the break, he fortified cities and built fortresses along the border between the kingdoms during his 17-year reign. Because of the weakened condition of the divided kingdom, Egypt conquered many Judean cities, especially in the south, even laying siege to Jerusalem itself at one time. Rehoboam, Solomon's son and successor, now only king of the southern kingdom because the northern kingdom had broken away, he was able to survive only by giving the Egyptian pharaoh all of the temple's treasure as a tribute and making Judah a vassal state of Egypt. Rehoboam's son and successor, Abijah, tried unsuccessfully to bring Israel under his control. Asa, Abijah's son and successor, lived in peace with Israel during his long reign. But he did strengthen the fortresses originally built by his grandfather Rehoboam up on the border. The Egyptians invaded Judah again with a huge army during his reign, but they actually defeated the Egyptians in battle. So that peace that resulted kept Judah free from the Egyptian invasions until the reign of Josiah.
Okay, it's a little hard to keep these guys straight. So we're talking about the kings in the southern kingdom. Some are good and some are bad. The kings in the northern kingdom all were bad. Is that what we concluded?
Yes. Yeah, we're only looking in the southern kingdom at the worst and the best.
Okay.
And only maybe, five or six of them.
Sure. So the kings of Judah don't have that great a record, all in all.
No, not overall.
Well, what about Abijah?
Well, he was succeeded by Asa, who reigned from 910 to 870 B.C. And he got along pretty well with the Israelites in the north during the first 36 years of his long reign. But this ended when Israel, that is the northern kingdom, built a fortress at Ramah on the border separating the two kingdoms. Although it was on Israel's side of the border, the fortress was only 10 miles from Jerusalem. Jerusalem was way in the north of the kingdom of Judah, just about 10 miles from the border of Israel. And to counter this threat to Jerusalem's security, Asa used gold and silver from the temple to entice Ben-Hadad I, who was the king of Aram-Damascus, or Syria, north of Israel, to end his alliance with Israel and attack the Israelites at Dan and other important cities of the tribe of Naphtali, causing Israel to withdraw from Ramah. Asa tore down the unfinished fortress and used the raw materials to fortify other cities on Judah's side of the border.
Okay, would Asa be considered one of the good rulers of Judah?
Well, he gets mixed reviews from biblical scholars. During his long reign of 41 years, he restored divine worship, He destroyed idols, and he commanded that Judah return to the true God of their fathers. One of the reasons we're kind of looking at some of these good and bad ones, one of the reasons that God allowed Judah to last so long is it did have some good kings, but it also had some real bad ones. And so that's why I think it's, kind of enlightening to give a little bit of information about these various, some of the kings. For example, he even went so far as to take away the royal status of his grandmother for setting up an idol, which he had burned. Nonetheless, he is faulted for not abolishing the high places where non-sanctioned worship took place. For some reason, God really got irritated whether it be the northern kingdom or the southern kingdom, the kings would allow places of worship in the high places up on, mountains or down in groves of trees, because that's where the pagans, that's where they had their places of worship, and that's where they made their sacrifices. And sacrifices are only supposed to be made in one place, and that was in Jerusalem in the temple that Solomon had built. Furthermore, he was chastised by the prophet Hanani, he's not one of the prophets that we ever hear of, for making a treaty with Syria when menaced by Israel, instead of trusting that God would protect Judah as he had when the Egyptians had invaded. Moreover, he did not seek the Lord's help when he fell ill, but instead trusted that his physicians would heal him, and as a result, he died.
Let me just throw in here a moment to connect it with our modern times about all this worship on high places and in the groves, idols, and a child sacrifice. Joe Scheidler recently told me that a guy who had come out of the abortion business had told him, he said, now this wasn't true of everybody in the abortion clinics, but in the abortion clinic where I worked, we considered the clinic our temple, and it's where we offered sacrifice to God of the children. And that's why we consider it a sacrament. That's the word that he used, something holy. And that's why we are very upset when people protest outside our church, just as you would be upset if people protested outside your church, Catholic Church or Protestant, whatever it might be. But I thought, what a startling statement of satanic idea. And he said we worship Satan, and we actually offer these children like they did in olden days. So it's not just something out of history where they were burned in the fire, but it's happening even in our own country and in even our own days.
Yeah, that's a good rationalization. Rationalization is usually defined as reasons that we give for something that's basically really sociably unacceptable, but we believe them to be true. So that's why we call them rationalizations and not excuses. Mm-hmm. But I've got an old saying that I've been saying probably for 50 years at least. The road to hell is paved not just with good intentions, but it's also paved with rationalizations.
Oh,
and
well,
I think that's very true of that story you just related there.
Sure. Well, we almost have to rationalize we're doing something so evil that it would be self-destructive if we didn't have a supposedly good reason for doing it. And of course, so often the good reason is money. It's one of the greatest money makers in our country. When I think it costs $800 or something like that to get an abortion today, and you have to pay, can't put it on your charge, that it really is. There's an awful lot of, as people who come out of the abortion movement say, awful lot of greed in trying to more and more. He also said that one of the guys said that they when girls come to the clinic, they give them a birth control pill that is only partially effective, so that they will come back eventually and have an abortion, which obviously makes money for them. So we're not only dealing with the demonic in the Old Testament, we're dealing with the demonic in our own times. Well, let's go on. Just wanted to throw that in because it seems so pertinent. King Jehoshaphat, I think he was Asa's successor, was he maybe more one of the better kings?
Yes. He became the king of Judah when his 35 years old.
Now we're in the southern kingdom.
Yes, we're in the southern kingdom of Judah. He reigned for 25 years, approximately between 873 and 849 B.C. Jehoshaphat spent the first years of his reign fortifying his kingdom against Israel.
The northern kingdom.
Northern kingdom. This story is told in 2 Chronicles 17. He has been considered one of Judah's good kings because he tried to stop the temple prostitution in his kingdom. He destroyed the idols of Baal in the land, and he sent out priests and Levites to instruct the people in the law, things of that sort. On one occasion, he was horrified when he saw a depiction on the wall of another king sacrificing his son to a god when he happened to be visiting another king. The author of 2 Chronicles generally praises his reign.
Okay, how about good King Jehoshaphat's successor?
According to 2 Kings 8:16, Jehoram became co-regent of Judah when his father, Jehoshaphat, was still the king, when he got old and probably feeble and couldn't really carry out his duties very well. There has been some dispute among biblical scholars as to when he reigned, but it was around 849 to 842, somewhere in that ballpark. As was fairly common in those days, he had all of his brothers killed to secure his throne. You remember, even Solomon had done that when he became king. He was supposed to have been so wise, in the early part of his reign at least. Jehoram was 32 years old when he ascended the throne, and he reigned for 8 years. And he was certainly one of Judah's bad kings, the southern kingdom's bad kings. The Bible states that, quote, he made high places of worship in the hill country of Judah. There we go with the high places again. And he led the inhabitants of Jerusalem into unfaithfulness and made Judah go astray. End of quote. Second Chronicles says of him, quote, and he walked in the way of the kings of Israel. Remember, all the kings of Israel, all 20 of them were bad.
Mm-hmm.
As the house of Ahab had done. For the daughter of Ahab was his wife, and he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. Yet the Lord would not destroy the house of David because of the covenant which he had made with David. And since he had promised to give a lamp to him and to his sons forever, he had married Ahab's daughter and formed an alliance with Ahab's kingdom of Israel. Even with the alliance, his kingdom was shaky, causing the Edomites to successfully revolt and separate from his kingdom. Second Chronicles tells us also that the town of Libna revolted against him because he had abandoned Yahweh, God of his father. This story is told in 2 Chronicles 21. The book of 2 Chronicles also says that the Philistines, Arabs, and Ethiopians raided and looted the king's house and carried off all of his family except for his youngest son, Jehoahaz. That ends that quote I've been giving there from Chronicles. Although Elijah was primarily a prophet sent to the kingdom of Israel, he sent a letter to Jeroboam warning him that he had forsaken the Lord, the God of his fathers. The prophet said, thus says the Lord, the God of David, your father, because you have not walked in the ways of Jehoshaphat, your father, or in the ways of Asa, the king of Judah, but have walked in the way of the kings of Israel and have led Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem into unfaithfulness as the house of Ahab led Israel into unfaithfulness. And also you have killed your brothers of your father's house, you who were better than yourself. Behold, the Lord will bring a great plague on your children, your wives, and all your possessions, and you yourself will have a severe sickness with the disease of your bowels until your bowels come out because of the disease day by day. This prophecy was fulfilled later when Jehoram suffered a painful inflammation of the abdomen, and he died 2 years later when his bowels literally fell out, according to 2 Chronicles 21. He had proven such a bad king that he wasn't even buried among the tombs of the kings of Judah.
It seems that the one thing that the scriptures tell us about the good kings or the bad kings is that they see God's hand in either punishment that comes with sickness or famine or disease or invasion, or prosperity and peace. That was because of the good reign of the king. And I think we've lost that vision of the Bible, that when we're a sinful people, then all kinds of bad things happen to us, but we don't interpret them as something that God is trying to shake us up.
Well, we've discussed a few of the good kings and bad kings to kind of illustrate God had good reason to do what he did, you know, when he punished the Israelites, whether they be from the northern kingdom or from the southern kingdom of Judah.
Well, Ron, you said earlier that one of the things that saved Judah for another century and a half after the fall of the northern kingdom, now then called Israel, was that it had a few good kings. And so besides Jehoshaphat, tell us about some of these good kings.
Yeah, we've mostly been looking at three or four of the bad kings and some of the things that they did. And we've also looked at the two fairly good Judean kings, Asa and Jehoshaphat. They certainly were better men than some who preceded and followed them in Judah, and certainly better than any of the kings of the northern kingdom that already had fallen to the Assyrians. For example, Rehoboam and his son, Abijah, who preceded them, they were wicked men. And as we discussed, Jehoram, who followed them, was an evil man, as was his immediate successors, Ahaziah, Joash, and Amaziah. But we get to one of the good kings, northern king or southern kings, and Uzziah was one of the greatest. He reigned during the over half of the 8th century B.C. and has been characterized as a, quote, vigorous and able ruler. And he started out as a good ruler under the influence of the prophet Zechariah. It was said that he was faithful to God and that, quote, did that which was right in the sight of God. But as so often happened among the rulers of Israel, his pride led to his downfall.
Oh, my. I thought we were going to have a good king.
He was unfaithful to the Lord, his God, and entered the temple of the Lord to burn incense on the altar of incense. This function, of course, was reserved only for the Levitical priest. And he was stopped by Azariah, the high priest, and 80 of the priests at the door when he tried to go in and do this. An earthquake shook the ground and tore a hole in the temple, letting the bright rays of the sun shine through the king's face. And according to Flavius Josephus, the historian of the Jews, he was stricken with leprosy as a punishment. And after he was driven from the temple, and because of his leprosy, he was required to live in a separate house until his death outside the city, as all lepers, of course, were required to do. His son Jotham took over as co-regent for the last 11 years of Uzziah's life. Overall, he was a good king overall. But in the end, he let his pride overcome him. In other words, he got the idea he wanted to be a priest too. And of course, that was not something that was pleasing to God. His son, Jotham, ruled Judah for 16 years. A time contemporary with the prophets Isaiah, Hosea, Amos, and Micah, by whose advice he benefited. One source says of his reign that in 736 and 735, the Assyrians were advancing south toward Judah, and that many Judeans thought it was time to submit to them and be crushed, or be crushed. And this source maintains that in 735, it is altogether likely that a pro-Assyrian group felt itself strong enough to force Jotham into retirement and to place Ahaz on the throne. Although Jotham continued to live to his 20th year, it was Ahaz who directed affairs from 735 onward.
It pains me to hear about these kings, Ron, and realize that God is using what he's got to prepare the kingdom of his son through good king, a few good kings, and mostly bad kings.
Well, a lot of people have read the Old Testament and see all these stories, and they thought, boy, you know, these people were, you know, really basically overall kind of a wicked people.
Well, and I think one thing we can learn is that if as a country we don't come back to God, the same thing's going to happen to us. It's just the ordinary carrying out. If we don't learn from history, we're bound to repeat it. What about Ahaz? Wasn't he one of the most wicked kings of Judah? I keep being sad about hearing how wicked these guys are.
Yes, he's probably the last wicked king we're going to talk about, at least in any detail. It's described in 2 Kings. It's also in Isaiah and 2 Chronicles in different places, that he was 20 years old when he began his reign, and he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. And he did not do what was right in the eyes of the Lord, according to 2 Chronicles. Like his father David, who walked in the ways of the kings of Israel, he even made molten images for the Baals, and he burned incense in the valley of the son of Hinnom, and he burned his sons as an offering, according to the abominable practices of the nations, whom the Lord drove out before the people of Israel. And he sacrificed and burned incense on the high places and on the hills and under every green tree. Therefore the Lord his God gave him the hand of the king of Syria, who defeated him and took captive a great number of his people and brought them to Damascus. He was also given into the hand of the king of Israel, who defeated him with great slaughter. That ends that quote. So he completely ignored the warning of the prophets Isaiah, Hosea, and Micah, and died at the age of 36. And he was to be succeeded by his son Hezekiah, who was one of the good kings, as we'll see in our next session.
Okay, I don't think we've got time to go into Hezekiah, but I wish we could end on a good king. But, you know, the Portuguese have a proverb, God writes straight with crooked lines, and God accomplishes good with crooked people. That's the omnipotence of God. And I remember St. Augustine commented that any time we have committed sins in our own lives, once we have repented or said we're sorry and want to make a new beginning, God will even use that sinful material to help us serve him better. Like they become a stepping stone. Peter's denial of Jesus three times was accountable for his great virtue in following Jesus, even being crucified upside down on a cross.
Well, as we'll find out when we talk about Hezekiah, even though he was a really good man, that it was too late. God didn't let the kingdom fall during his reign, but as soon as he died, when his son took over, and then, of course, you're going to see the end of the southern kingdom of Judah, and they get defeated, of course, by the Babylonians.
Okay, well, with those words, Ron, we'll close out, and to our listening audience, we say, may God bless you all, always, and in all ways.